Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. Recording this just before the holiday season, an unusually warm week for us in Vancouver, but everyone's taking full advantage of it. Before the holidays start, though, I have the great pleasure of speaking with a colleague from the Netherlands who's just breaking into the field. His name is Rob Kickert, and he and his colleagues have a paper called The Role of the Assessment Policy in the Relation Between Learning and Performance that will be published in the March 2018 issue of Medical Education. Well, I understand this is not only part of your PhD studies, but it's your very first publication.
Yeah, it is.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations. I should have mentioned that you're at Erasmus University conducting your PhD in the Department of Psychology, Education, and Child Studies.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always nice to see how things are starting for someone so new to the field. And with that as knowledge that I didn't have before we started this call, I'm even more impressed that you've been able to take on such a big and important topic in a relatively short period of time. Our listeners won't know yet, but this paper really gets at the heart of that old adage of assessment drives learning. Was there something about the context in which you're working or your own background that made that a priority area for you?
Well, actually, before I started doing my PhD, I was already a teacher for a couple of years and a student counselor or a study advisor. So I had to give advice to a lot of students who were struggling, for instance, with academic dismissal policies and the stress it gave them or the tactical decisions they had to make about it. So yeah, it already had my interest before I started doing the actual research.
And the key distinction that has been in the way medical educators are talking about assessment for decades really has been between formative and summative assessment. And you've tried to address the issue here of if it makes a difference, really, whether an assessment practice is one form or the other. What was the conceptual framing that you were using to try to guide your thinking about this work?
Well, the conceptual framework is about self-regulated learning. And actually, one of my supervisors, Karen Stegers-Jager, during her PhD, she made a conceptual model of how to predict academic performance in this medical school. And she used motivation, self-regulation, and participation to predict academic performance.
And was it something happening at the school, though, that allowed this study to take place? How did you wind up in a situation where you had a comparison to be made between...
Yeah, all faculties of Erasmus University changed their assessment policy, actually, in the last couple of years. All faculties did so in a slightly different way. The context here is that in Dutch higher education, most universities have an academic dismissal policy where students have to attain 40 out of 60 first-year credits in the first year, and then to have all 60 first-year credits after 2 years. So the final academic dismissal policy is made after 2 years. And Erasmus University switched and changed this to having the final decision after 1 year, meaning that students actually had to obtain all 60 first-year credits within 1 year. So this practical change in the policy was the direct cause for my whole PhD project, because I'm investigating the results of this change for academic performance and behavior and motivation and self-regulation.
And do you know what motivated the change?
I think it's twofold. First of all, an academic dismissal after 2 years is quite a long time. So if you're expelled from your course program after 2 years, well, a lot of students say, I've wasted 2 years of my life. I personally don't really see it as if you've wasted those 2 years. Right. But of course, it's quite a long time for making such a big decision. So that's the first reason, to speed up the decision. That's good for all stakeholders because the students know faster if they're allowed to stay or not. And it saves money for the university and actually for the whole society as well. The second reason is it will help accelerate academic progress. I think in Dutch higher education, there's for a long time been a bit of a culture that it's normal to take, for instance, 7 years to finish a four-year course program. And this is changing a little bit. The government has, well, especially made decisions about this, and they want most students to take maximum of 5 years, for instance, to finish a four-year program.
So your timing is exceptional. You've got this natural experiment that's been set up, effectively the same assessment processes, just higher stakes placed on them in this first year. It's a change that in many ways contradicts the trend in medical education more generally, where medical programs are in many circumstances moving towards more programmatic assessment activities, where there'd be a larger number of assessments that are lower stakes. Was there any challenge from within the medical school as this transition occurred?
As you mentioned in the beginning, I'm not part of the medical department myself, so it's hard for me to tell this, but I do know that there is criticism from many people, some who actually know what happens and some who really don't. For instance, part of this policy change is also that there's a limited form of compensation between grades. And there's a lot of criticism from people about this compensation, and they say it's terrible that you're allowed to compensate and that you can pass with an insufficient grade. Well, if you actually look at it from a psychometric point of view, compensation between grades makes a lot of sense for the reliability and the validity of the decision that you're actually making in your academic dismissal policy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there's quite a lot of, I don't know if you can say this in English as well, underbelly feelings about this, which sometimes aren't really backed by the literature or the research. But yeah, I think it was kind of a bold move for Erasmus University in this case to do this, and they did get criticism for it as well. Yeah.
Interesting. And so what data did you have available to you? As, again, students went through this natural experiment, there was obviously some data that accumulates through their educational program, but you went above and beyond and collected some things additionally. I'll just ask you to describe those for our listeners.
Yeah, so first of all, we just have the grades students get for their assessments. And then in 2008 and 2009, which was a couple of years ago, of course, Karen Stegers-Jager, my supervisor, collected the Motivated Strategies for Learning questionnaire that measures motivation and learning strategies, self-regulated learning. And we collected it again in the years after this change was made, 14, 15. So we added these two sources of information. Actually, the MSLQ, the Motivated Strategies for Learning questionnaire, was also part of the curriculum in these years. So it was sort of a lucky coincidence because students, well, the primary goal was for students to use it as a source of self-reflection on their learning strategies and motivation. So that was a great opportunity for us. And we combined the MSLQ with performance in this model.
So in order to enable us to get into a few of the details, what were your general findings of those measures which showed a difference between the old lower stakes assessment process and the new higher stakes one?
Well, I think first and foremost, there was a significant increase in performance under the higher stakes policy. Maybe we should mention that it's not just higher stakes, but also instead of a conjunctive system where students have to pass each individual test with a 5.5 out of 10, they also have to have a 6.0 average now. And I personally feel that the rise in average grades is probably mainly due to this rise in the performance standard here. Yeah, so first of all, performance changed, but also generally speaking, motivation, self-regulation and participation also increased. So most of the subscales we measured of the MSLQ and the participation items increased in this study.
And you did some fairly advanced statistical modeling to try to understand the relationship between those variables. Can I ask you to describe what you did there and some of the key results as well?
Yeah, we did structural equation modeling because my supervisor made a model in the old assessment policy. And in this case, in order to see whether the relations between motivation, self-regulated learning, participation, and performance were similar under the new policy, it made sense to cross-validate that structural equation model in the new cohorts who studied under the new assessment policy. And well, we found out the model was invariant in statistical terms, or that the relations between these concepts that I just mentioned were similar under the new assessment policy.
And so if I interpret that correctly, what it seems to indicate is that performance went up in the newer model because the change increased motivation and the way in which people were going about learning. Is that a fair interpretation?
Yeah, that's the way I would interpret it as well. We did so in the article. Of course, there are things that we didn't measure here, so there might be other explanations, but as the relations stayed the same and the constructs on average got higher, this seems to be the logical explanation. Yes, that's correct.
One implication or one interpretation of that is that we should all raise the stakes of our assessment practices to encourage better performance. Is that the conclusion you're drawing, or what do you think people should do with these results?
No, I think everybody should raise the stakes is probably not the wisest move. I think it's always context dependent, first of all. Secondly, I think it's not just the rise in the stakes maybe here that's the key point, but also the rise in performance standard from having to have a 5.5 out of 10 to having a 6.0 out of 10. One of the striking results we got was that the rise in average performance was also half a point. So it was strikingly similar to the rise in performance standards. So in this research, it's not possible for us to separate the effects of raising the stakes and raising the performance standards because both got raised at the same time. So it would be interesting to see which one of these two causes what.
Yeah, and also interesting to see where the threshold lies, or if there is some degree of raising the standards or the stakes leads to better performance until you get to a certain point. Wondering about mastery learning and the whole model that suggests that we should not move people forward to the next level until they can demonstrate absolute mastery of material. That's the extreme view that's been shown successful in some other contexts, but it would be difficult, I imagine, to implement at a full curricular level like you've seen where you work.
Yeah. So of course, here we're talking about a raise from a 5.5 to a 6.0. It's hard to predict what will happen if you would raise it to a 6.5 or even a 7.0. And I definitely don't expect this relationship to be linear. So there will be an optimum. And even now, in this research, for instance, we didn't take stress or general well-being into account. Mm-hmm. So even here, you can have people saying, oh, you've raised performance, motivation, self-regulation, participation. But what happened to the stuff you didn't measure? So I would be careful about saying that everyone would have to raise the stakes or everyone should raise the performance standards. But yeah, the results here are promising in the sense that in this case, it seemed to have positive effects. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's nothing better for being about halfway through a PhD than to know that there are a lot of additional questions that you'd still need to ask.
So. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's nice. And I'm also curious to see, for instance, what will happen in other student populations, because this medical school in particular already had quite a high progress rate, for instance. So there's a kind of a ceiling effect. There wasn't even that much to gain by these changes, I think. While in other subjects, students in general may be a bit less motivated to already do well. Lots of medical students have a lifelong dream of becoming a doctor and want to work really hard for it. So it will also be interesting to see what would happen in other course programs with other student populations.
Absolutely. And that note of anticipation is probably a very good place for us to end. We'll all look forward to hearing how this evolves and curious to know if you are able to get some more traction on what are the particular active ingredients and what are the advantages and disadvantages of transitions like this.
So. Yeah, luckily, I'm very curious myself still, too. So that's, yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Well, good luck with the rest of your studies. Well, as I said, we'll eagerly await what is to come. And while we do that, I'll just remind our listeners that the paper we've been discussing is entitled The Role of the Assessment Policy in the Relation Between Learning and Performance. And the voice you've been hearing is Rob Kickert, who's a PhD student at Erasmus University. Thanks one more time, Rob, for making the time.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.